Explanation of the surah. هَلْ أَتَى عَلَى الْإِنسَانِ حِينٌ مِّنَ الدَّهْرِ لَمْ يَكُنْ شَيْئًا مَذْكُورًا. Has there passed over man a period of time when he was a thing not worthy of mention? Exegetes have regarded the interrogative particle hal to be synonymous to the particle khad. However, I could not find any corroboration of this view in classical Arabic poetry. I have deeply deliberated upon some examples which are presented in support of this view, and in my view, in them too, the particle hal is used as an interrogative. However, just as interrogative particles are used in our language in different connotations, in Arabic too, they have various connotations. It is neither possible to explain all of them here, nor is there any such need. Some of their aspects have already been discussed in previous surahs, and some will come under discussion at appropriate places in the subsequent surahs. Here, this much is needed to be kept in consideration, that a subtle usage of an interrogative sentence is to make an addressee accept something which is a self-evident reality, but he, in spite of acknowledging this fact, deviates from it in practice. He is not willing to accept it, even though he regards it to be true. As an example of this style, consider the sentence which a mother says to her disobedient son. Don't you remember that you were put in my lap in the form of a lump of meat? I transformed my blood into milk and made you drink it, and then looked after you until you became a mature human being. A little deliberation will show that these are not simple factual statements. They encompass a lot of meanings. For example, they remind their son of one of the great obligations imposed on him, which he is not fulfilling, even though there is no room for denying it. They are replete with various aspects of anger, reprimand, sorrow, and express yearning. They contain a real complaint and protest. All these meanings emanate from this interrogative nature of the sentences. If these sentences are divested of their interrogative sense and converted into simple factual statements, then all these meanings will be stripped from them. Similar is the case with this verse. Its interrogative particle encompasses many meanings, which will become evident as the surah gradually unfolds itself. If the interrogative particle hal is understood to convey the same meaning as qad, then this verse will become a very inappropriate prelude to the subjects which are subsequently raised in it. A famous couplet from the Mu'allaka of Antara ibn Shaddad reads, هَلْ غَادَرَ الشُّعَرَاءُ مِنْ مُتَرَدَّمِي أَمْ هَلْ عَرَفْتَ الدَّارَ بَعْدَ التَّبَهُّمِ. Did the poets leave a void in poetry, or did you find the clue to the place of the beloved after your inquisitiveness? This is a very exquisite opening couplet, and all its beauty is concealed in its interrogative nature. If the particle hal is replaced with qad, it will divest the couplet of this beauty. The poet, while addressing himself, is inquiring after the driving force behind the composition of this eulogy. Was it that some void remained in poetry which he wanted to fill, or was it the fact that the remains of the beloved's house had ignited the flame of love which wanted expression? The implication is that both these reasons were present. Indeed, the poetry was inflicted with a void that needed to be fulfilled by this eulogy, and in spite of the fact that the subject of the clue to a beloved's house has been discussed in a variety of ways and moods by poets, it was still wanting and needed more expression. Here the objective is not to point out the beauty of this opening couplet. The only purpose is to point out the difference between styles. The word khad would also have been appropriate as far as the rhyme and meter of the couplet is concerned. However, the couplet would have been totally deprived of such depth of meaning. The addressees of this verse are people who disbelieve the day of judgment and the reward and punishment which will take place therein. They are addressed by the Quran and asked whether there was not a time when man was virtually a non-entity. He was a creature that roamed in water, mud and mire. Providence made this insignificant existence pass through various stages, and after training and educating him, made him reach a level in which he became the best of all creatures. The purpose of this question is to induce man to reflect as to why such elaborate arrangements were made by providence for him. Why was he blessed with such great abilities? Was all this done merely so that he eats, drinks, and then dies? Are not some responsibilities imposed on him as a result of being blessed with such favors? Does man not owe some obligations to the being who created him? These questions should arise in every person who reflects on his existence. Man's own being is the closest to him, and every part of him induces him to reflect and ponder. The interrogative nature of the verse is meant to stimulate him towards reflection. If God is beyond man's eyes, his own being is at hand. By deliberating on it, he can witness God's power and providence, mercy and justice. Similarly, if he reflects, he will come to realize that although he has not seen the day of judgment, yet his own intuition contains signs and testimonies of such a day. In fact, so blatant are these testimonies that he cannot deny them, unless, of course, he is absolutely stubborn. إِنَّا خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ مِنْ نُطْفَةٍ أَمْشَاجٍ نَبْتَلِيهِ فَجَعَلْنَاهُ سَمِيعًا بَصِيرًا. We have created man from a drop of mingled fluid. We continued to turn it over until we made him capable of hearing and seeing. In the preceding verse, attention is directed to the bleak past man had at the beginning of his life. Here in this verse, various phases of his creation are alluded to, every aspect of which is before him, and which are pointing to the reality this verse is stating, which is, man is created from a drop of a fluid. Providence makes this very drop pass through various phases and stages, and then fashions from it a human being who can hear, understand, and use his intellect. Man should reflect on this fact. How can it be difficult for the God who has shown such superb creativity in a drop of a fluid to recreate man? He should also reflect on how the knowing and wise God, who has blessed an insignificant drop of fluid with the higher faculties of sight and hearing, and also given him an awareness of good and evil, would do something so meaningless as not to bring forth a day of reward and punishment. In the expression, min nutfatin amshaj, the word amshaj is the plural of mashaj and mashij. One of its meanings is something which is a mixture and blend. The word amshaj is among those words which, in spite of being plural, are used as an adjective for singular entities. The fact that a fertilized sperm is a blend may refer to the fact that it consists of various components, and may also refer to the fact that it is a blend of the sperm and ovular cells of a man and a woman respectively. It should be kept in consideration that keeping a balance between various components and conflicting natures so as to produce the right result in accordance with the required objective is not possible unless the whole process is carried out under the supervision of a wise and powerful being. A chance happening cannot produce such a process replete with wisdom and sagacity. Generally, people have taken the word nabtalihi to refer to the cause. Its meaning in this case would be, we have created you to test you. However, had it been used in this causative meaning, it should have been appended with the particle of causation, which is law. It grammatically occurs in the form of an accusative of state or hal, which is entirely different from the meaning of causation. In my opinion too, it is an accusative of state and means we created man in such a manner that we, after making him gradually pass through various phases, perfected him into a cognizant and discerning human being. The word ibtalaun means to test and try out something. When a person tests a thing, he surveys it from various angles, turning it over from side to side. From this meaning, the sense of passing from one phase to another was incorporated into it. Here the word is used in this very meaning. Some exegetes have also adopted this meaning. The various phases and stages after crossing which man's creation culminated are mentioned at various places in the Quran. Following are some examples. يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ إِن كُنْتُمْ فِي رَيْبٍ مِّنَ الْبَعْثِ فَإِنَّا خَلَقْنَاكُمْ مِّنْ تُرَابٍ ثُمَّ مِّنْ نُطْفَةٍ ثم من علقة ثم من مضغة مخلقة وغير مخلقة لنبين لكم ونقر في الأرحام ما نشاء إلى أجل مسمى ثم نخرجكم طفلا ثم لتبلغوا أشدكم. People, if you have doubts on being raised again after death, then reflect on the fact that we created you from clay, then from a drop of water, then from a clot of blood, and then from a lump of flesh, some complete and some incomplete, so that we might fully manifest to you our power and mercy. We then make it stay in the womb as much as you want for an appointed time, and then we bring you forth as infants, then we nourish you that you reach your prime. Surah number 22, verse 5. In Surah Mu'minun, the words are, وَلَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ مِنْ سُلَالَةٍ مِنْ طِينٍ ثُمَّ جَعَلْنَاهُ نُطْفَةً فِي قَرَارٍ مَكِينٍ ثُمَّ خَلَقْنَا النُّطْفَةَ عَلَقَةً فَخَلَقْنَا الْعَلَقَةَ مُضْغَةً فَخَلَقْنَا الْمُضْغَةَ عِظَامًا فَكَسَوْنَا الْعِظَامَ لَحْمًا ثُمَّ أَنْشَأْنَاهُ خَلْقًا آخَرَ فَتَبَارَكَ اللَّهُ أَحْسَنُ الْخَالِقِينَ. And we first created man from an essence of clay, then placed him in the form of a drop of blood in a secure place. Then we fashioned this drop of water into a clot of blood, then made the clot of blood into a lump of flesh. Then we created bones in it, and then clothed the bones with flesh, then brought it forth as an entirely new creation. So blessed be God, the best of creators. Surah number 23, verses 12 to 16. The various phases of creation detailed in the above quoted verses are very concisely referred to in the verse under discussion. The word naptalihi is used for this gradual passage from one phase to another. It is evident from this that the final product has to pass through many stages. At each stage, Providence tried and tested it well as to whether the prescribed characteristics of each stage had appeared in it or not. The words فَجَعَلْنَاهُ سَمِيعًا بَصِيرًا or until we made him capable of hearing and seeing summarize all this grand arrangement. Either man was once an insignificant thing unworthy of mention in the form of water, clod, mud and clot, or there came a stage when the Almighty blessed him with the high qualities of seeing and hearing. The words then brought it forth as an entirely new creation of Surah Mu'minun quoted above refer to this second stage. The words Sami'un Basir actually symbolize all higher traits and abilities of man. It is because of these that man is able to distinguish between good and evil, and he becomes worthy of being tested by the Almighty. This test relates to whether man adopts the right path and thereby becomes a grateful person to God, or deviates from it and becomes an ungrateful person who is unappreciative of the favors of God. An obvious consequence of this trial is that those who honor and value their traits and abilities should be rewarded, and those who do not should be punished. If this does not happen, then what is the purpose of all these elaborate arrangements made by Providence in the creation of man?